Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. My pops picked the place up for $1,500 back in 1964.
What is up, Wisconsin? Raised in Wisco tonight, 7 o'clock from the Fishbowl, WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM. Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman. Danielle, what's happening? Danielle.
Joel.
Carried the show for 2 weeks because I had some pretty awesome hunting that I got to do in upstate New York. And then I just returned from España. That's what they call it in Spain. España.
I feel like going to Spain would be definitely a trip. Have you gone to Spain before?
No.
No?
I've been to Europe a couple times. A few times. I went on my honeymoon and then I studied in England in college. And then I had gone to France, Wales, Zagorsk, Russia, Moscow, which was the former Soviet Union at the time that I was there, which was super interesting. So I had been to Europe, Heidelberg, Germany, I had gone to, but this was my first time in Spain, and I think Spain is underappreciated as a European country because I think a lot of people go to, you know, France, Paris, England, London. But I have to tell you, man, after being to Spain, if you go to Europe and you don't go to Spain, you are missing out. But first, before we get to that, what have you been doing the past couple of weeks? Have you gotten any hunting in?
I have, but first I want to say hi to Kimmy Chocolate. You're texting me nonstop. Hi. Hello.
Kimmy Chocolate is
I've known her for 20 plus years now. That's like my best friend. Okay. And this is her first time hearing me on the radio, so I had to say hi to her. She's freaking out. She said, oh my God, I can hear you.
On the actual airwaves.
On the airwaves going through her speakers in her car right now.
Well, I'm very proud to say that as the number one show in all of Waukesha and Southeast Wisconsin, I don't know if that's true, by the way.
It is. It's totally true.
On WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Raised in Wisco. For those of you who don't know me, my name's Joel Clayfish. I was born a couple blocks away from here. She's Danielle Fairman. We hosted a show called Kill It, Clean It, Cook It Together for many years.
Yes, we did.
Channel 12, WISN, out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Got to know each other through Buck Rub, Archery, and our friend Greg Kasmierski, much better known as Kaz. He has put a bow and put archery equipment in the hands of people for the first time many times throughout many people's lives, and really devotes his life to getting new hunters involved and making sure that if you're a seasoned hunter, you've got the very best equipment. So what have you been doing the last couple of weeks?
Well, last week was the southern opener for duck, so south of 10. And then I got six teal on Saturday, and then Sunday we did so much better with a bunch of woodies and little Susies and all that kind of stuff, but we did great. Bandit was so exhausted, he could not even get up after his nap. He was just retrieving, like, nonstop, and it was in tall grass, so he had a fox dive down because sometimes accidentally we wing them. So they try to, you know, burrow into like tight little spaces in the grass so we can't get to them.
Sure.
So Bandit would do like a whole fox dive down into it. I thought it was the cutest thing ever. But they had then the northern opener the previous week. I didn't do so hot right away in the morning. We saw hundreds of ducks. We were up on the, I don't know what marsh it was, but it was a marsh up there, a public marsh, and there was just nonstop, like, fireworks. You could just, gunshots blazing nonstop.
Did you have them coming into decoys pretty well? What kind of decoy spread were you running?
So both times, for the northern and the southern opener, we just had two mojos out there. We didn't use actual floaters at all.
You didn't put any floaters out, just had mojos.
Just had
mojos. Were you trying to look different than everyone else's spread, or was that part of the deal, or you just wanted to go in light?
Well, for one, it's definitely like a mile walk in.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yuck.
Icky. But we had marsh sheets this time, so it was a lot easier.
Marsha.
We had marsh seats. Okay. To where it's like a pedestal with a seat on it, and the legs kick
spread
out
so that they don't sink into the mud.
Yeah, which
how deep was the mud you were walking in?
6 to 1 foot deep in some spots.
So every step you're taking is like you're pulling your foot out of muck.
Oh yeah, you had a rock back and forth in some spots.
The worst.
And then we had the just the stand for Bandit, obviously. But in some spots it was fine. It was just, you know,
it's
you're in
still
a marsh.
A lot
so
to
some
carry
sparks,
in.
Some oh, hold on. I'm sorry. Reverse. The spot we were hunting was that muddy, but walking in it was just on a
wasn't
trail.
That tough.
No, it was on an actual grass trail.
No,
minus
you know
that hole. I fell into a hole and everything just went flying over my head like a scorpion. Fell in a hole. I didn't even freaking hit the ground. Oops. The construction comes out every once in a while. Sorry.
That's all right. Danielle does construction and she blames her. You didn't fully say the word, so I don't think we broke any FCC regulations, but our producer is giving you the stink eye from in there.
I can feel it.
So for me, when I duck hunt, like when people say, hey, you want to go duck hunting? The answer is always yes, but then I have to weigh it against actually duck hunting, where you're duck hunting in a marsh situation, because I hunt with all these young kids who weigh about 125 pounds,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm walking in at 240, and every
240?
Step I take,
huh.
I'm sinking way in, you know, twice as far as they are, and then you have to get your foot out every time. So
mm-hmm.
I do like trying to find, you know, areas that aren't as tough to get in, but then those areas are often hunted substantially more by other people.
Well, the southern unit we go to, they're about 3 years ago, that probably two other groups, but it's a small parking lot, and there's only one there's legally one entrance to this area.
Yeah.
And we take it up because we have four vehicles. Just me and Bill's family go out, and we just snag that whole thing up and do it right.
Well, that's the way to do
but
it.
But it's, again, a mile walk in.
I don't mind a mile walk if it's on gravel or a trail or
mm-hmm.
at least something like that. But
yep.
So I had...
Yeah,
I had two, I would say, not only the most fantastic hunts of my life, but two of the most like life influential hunts that mm-hmm. I've ever had in my life. And the first one, for those of you who are kind of new to the show or may not know this, I work for The Fowl Life on the Outdoor Channel. I work with Chad Belding, who's the host of The Fowl Life, and I do the Midwest hosting, and we have a Midwest podcast here. And I got a call 2.5 weeks ago from Chad, and he said, would you like to come to New York to go goose hunting? And I thought to myself, first thought I had was like, wait a minute, I'm going to go from one of the greatest goose hunting places in the world, Wisconsin and the Mississippi Flyway, to New York. Because what do you think of when you think of New York?
City.
You think of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
New York City.
The concrete jungle.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest with you folks, you can have New York City.
Yeah.
I've been there before. Have you been there?
I have not been there, but I have no need to go there. Even when I go to Milwaukee, I'm like, I can't stand it here. So I'm picturing New York is worse than Milwaukee.
I like Milwaukee because it's actually a navigable city, and you can get
this
around, and it's got great shows and great venues and
great people,
Midwestern people. You go to... I'm not a fan of New York. So I thought New York, and he was talking about upstate New York. I'm going to tell you something. So, of course, I said yes. I'm not going to pass up an opportunity. And what he didn't tell me right away
was
we were going to be hunting with firefighters who were first responders at 9/11.
Jeez.
Now, imagine that. So not only are you going to get to go hunt a different area, and I have to tell you, upstate New York is so beautiful.
Mm.
The layout, the contour of the land, and it's just glorious. It's very much like Canada. In fact, where we hunted was 30 minutes from the Canada border. So oh, wow. We were up right up near Canada, and you'd think to yourself, why would Canada, or why would that area of New York be such a great spot to goose hunt? And in fact, they have 15 bird per person per day limit.
15 per person?
No, you don't need a plug in your gun, nothing. I mean, for the molt migration. So the molt migration was taking place, and that's the geese that are not paired up, that are about a year or 2 years old, bandits growling in the corner at the cars going by in the fishbowl. And so I said yes to that.
Of course.
And that was, Danielle had her first solo show while I was gone doing that trip. And I have to tell you, so I fly out there, and what happens is you have essentially a funnel between the ocean and the Adirondack Mountains. So the Adirondack Mountains are on one side, and the ocean's on the other side. And all those geese coming from Canada, those molt migrators who are going to warmer climates because winter's coming, funnel through that area, and it is migrators like you have never seen before. Jeez. I have never imagined in my entire life, and we see a lot of geese. We're very successful goose hunters in yes. Wisconsin. And I have never seen anything like this in my entire life.
Oh,
it
wow.
was like every 3 to 5 minutes was another flock of migrating geese over the top of you.
Wow. So when you say migrating geese, I just think of them way up high and I can't call them in.
Well, that's a lot of times. We have plenty of migrators here in Wisconsin too, but they are those very high flying geese. And it was like every 3 to 5 minutes was another wow. pack of those migrating geese. The entire time we were there, I cooked. I cooked for the whole crew. And so we had the television crew with us. Chad and I recorded 16 podcasts.
16? How long were you gone for?
I was there for 4 days. And so the 3 to 4 days, we recorded 16 podcasts. We never stopped working. And I got to cook for everybody, which is a blast, as you know. And we had all wild game.
Oh, that's
perfect.
We
used the provider spices. And we're going to talk a lot more about that in the next segment. We're going to talk about the New York trip. Upstate New York with the firefighters from 9/11, and then we're going to do a large portion on the show on Spain because I got back
from a red stag hunt
from Spain, which was incredible. If you look at Danielle's Instagram, you can see a picture of the red stag I was able to take. But stay right here, 5:40 a.m. WAUK 101 FM, The Shaw. We'll be right back with really exciting hunts from the last couple of weeks.
I've said it before, but I'll say it again, because my family's always fought and died to save this land and a country boy. It's all I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road. When along came a semi with a...
Welcome back, everybody, to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish. That's me and
Danielle Fairman.
That's her.
Don't forget to call us at 844-967-2789.
I think you almost have that number memorized now.
I kind of do. I found it very nice to say it as I was going to commercial break, so then they had time to call in. Even though I had like 3 callers in 2 weeks, but
that's good. Yeah. Jump in. Hey, we're live in the Fishbowl, downtown Waukesha, Wisconsin, 217 Wisconsin Avenue. You should swing by and say hi. Look at us from the outside if you want, or come on in.
Hello.
Pet Bandit. Meet Bandit.
Yeah.
So Raised in Wisco, if you're new to the show, is a show that is, I would call it, what would you call it, outdoor-centric. We talk about the beautiful outdoors of the great state of Wisconsin mm-hmm. and beyond. But the show does not just focus on outdoor things. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot of hunting and fishing and cooking.
Yeah, we do.
We talk a lot about the provider lifestyle. Before we went to break, We were talking about the national show, The Fowl Life. Now, that's a show on the Outdoor Channel that I have the honor and privilege of working for, which is really exciting and fun. And I do cooking segments for that show. I do hunting segments for that show. And, in fact, some of the cooking segments are used on Ted Nugent's show.
I did not know that one.
Yes.
So have you met Ted Nugent?
I've talked to Ted Nugent over FaceTime.
Oh, that still counts.
Which is cool. I don't think that totally counts because I really want to meet him.
I feel like if he says your name, though.
That means you know him, but yeah. I don't know if he actually knows. He did endorse my wife for governor. And
perfect.
And now I'm doing cooking segments on his show, so that's pretty cool if you think about it. I mean, that's a pretty
really cool
deal. But I would love to meet him in person. I hope at some point I will get a chance to meet him in person. So check out Spirit of the Wild with Ted Nugent, and check out The Fowl Life on the Outdoor Channel and My Outdoor TV, and you'll get to see me cooking and hunting, and check out The Fowl Life podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Check out Danielle Fairman on her Instagram account.
And Facebook.
And
TikTok.
What's your Instagram? You have a TikTok now?
I've had a TikTok for a while. Oh, I'm definitely one of those. But I'm more of the funny one. I think I'm going to toot my own horn. I laugh at myself a lot.
Well,
I do funny things.
It's okay, Daniel. We laugh at you a lot, too. What is your Instagram handle?
Danielle.Fairman.
Danielle.Fairman. Check her out, and you'll get to see what's upcoming on Raised in Wisco, because Danielle's very good at posting what we've got up in the next couple of weeks. And next week, in fact, I'm going to talk about this. Next week's show is going to feature Robin Kennedy, because we launched our A-Team Adventure Series
today.
Which was very awesome. We took some folks with diverse abilities fishing out at Milford Hills today.
Oh, today?
And it was, this morning. And we're going to be talking about that next week with Robin Kennedy. And you have a special guest coming in.
Yeah, Rita Verhalen. So Jeb's wife from three episodes ago.
Okay, three episodes ago, Jeb Verhalen's wife, Rita's coming in next week, and she's going to be talking with us about one of the features of the show, Women in the Hunting World.
Yes.
In the outdoor world. And I understand she just got her first buck.
She did just get her first buck on Sunday, I believe.
Okay. Well, I have to be very clear. I have yet to kill a buck with my bow.
Oh.
So I sit a lot. Now, I'm also very picky, so that may be part of the reason why I have not killed a buck yet with my bow, because I have harvested does. We went into break, and if you hear Calvin in the background, I can hear Calvin a little bit in the headphones. That means he's probably going over the air a little bit, but he's got a call. Do we have a caller, Calvin?
9 or 10 pointer she got.
No, I think he's just having a private conversation with somebody in there. Calvin, did you just have like a personal conversation while we're on the air here? Is that what's going on?
You can't call.
Oh, I did not realize my mic wasn't muted. We had someone calling for a different show, I believe. He was not calling for you.
Oh, that's
Calvin.
So sad. You gotta say a little bit nicer than that.
Yeah, you can save my feelings a little bit.
My apologies.
Want me to take the knife out of you back there?
Jeez. So we went into break talking about the fact that I had a chance to head out to upstate New York to hunt the molt migration, where 15 geese per person per day are allowed.
That's a lot of cleaning.
A chance to hunt with Bo and Jim Hodges, who are New York firefighters. One's retired, but New York City firefighters. And Jim Hodges was a first responder firefighter. His first day of work was 9/11, 20 years ago.
No.
His first day on the job, and he had to go to the collapse of the Twin Towers. And I'm sitting in a blind next to him, and we're, shooting the baloney at just like regular dudes in a blind next to each other and hunting together.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, I cannot explain what an honor that was.
I believe it.
To visit with those guys and to learn what they had gone through. And if you think the tragedy of 9/11 was a one-day event, it was not. Those men and women and responders who were part of the recovery efforts and all of the stuff in the air that they were inhaling in the days and weeks and months and years to come after that has affected the rest of their lives, Danielle.
Oh, yeah. All the firefighters, everyone living there. And it just, I can imagine all the debris they had to clean up. Imagine starting doing that and just finding bodies. I don't want to get too gruesome, but like I could not do that.
I can't.
That has to take a special person, and that will affect you for the rest of your life.
I cannot imagine the emotional toll it would take. Nope. Literally crawling on your hands and knees through rubble looking for survivors or looking for the remains of people who were killed. Your job was rescue and recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And just to sit and talk with these guys and to understand what they had been going through and continue to go through was awe-inspiring, that there are still heroes. When we come back, we're going to pick it up from there, and we'll be right back after the next break on Raised in Wisco with Joel and Danielle. We'll be right back. By yourself.
You're here.
Welcome back to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, coming to you live from the Fishbowl in downtown Waukesha every Thursday at 7 p.m. Stop by and see us. Call in. The number is 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. And next week, we've got Rita Verhalen, who's going to be with us, talking about women's role in the outdoors and harvesting her first buck of her life with archery, which is pretty cool.
It is very cool.
And Robin Kennedy is going to join us to talk about the A-Team Adventure Series,
yay,
which is an organization that gets folks with disabilities into the outdoors of Wisconsin, which is something extremely important to me and very close to my heart. In fact, you'll hear me use the term people with diverse abilities, because diversity is a buzzword now, and just because you have different abilities does not mean that you shouldn't be afforded every opportunity, particularly in the great state of Wisconsin and everything that we have to offer with the natural resources here and the waters and woods and lakes. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. We went into the break talking about the trip that I was able to take with The Fowl Life from the Outdoor Channel and hunting with New York City firefighters who were responding to 9/11 20 years ago, and just getting to spend time with them. And one of the questions that I had asked Bo and Jim was why hunting was important to them. Why, you
know, a good question.
Being out in the field is important to them. And they gave me an answer that although they have got many, many, many pressures in their lives and many things that affect their lives on a day-to-day basis because of the events of 9/11 and the effects that that has had on that entire city and state and our nation since then that are ongoing today, many of the people who responded to 9/11 and in the research, rescue, recovery, cleanup over the years that followed are now finding themselves with physical ailments and health issues that they're dealing with because of everything that they inhaled or were exposed to while they were actually doing the recovery and research.
I think days and days, they're just breathing all that stuff in. They weren't probably prepared for any of that either. So
I don't
know what to go in like. What to go in with, to how to breathe, to move. And, you know, they're just on pure adrenaline going nonstop. So their body was weakened.
It has done a lot. Ugh, it has done a lot of damage to many people. And then that is completely separate from the emotional toll and stresses. And Both of them answered me by saying when they are in the woods, in the field, hunting, harvesting food that they're going to eat, that that is one of the places that they are most at peace. And I think that that's something that everybody who hunts, fishes, kayaks, hikes, mountain climbs, rock
anything
climbs,
outdoors, pretty much.
Outdoors, you know, dog trains, shoots archery. I think that's something that for those who listen, who are listening now, who don't do it, if you want to talk about a reason to do something, for me in my life, I'm not a drinker. And I, you know, a lot of people have cocktails at the end of the day, and God bless them for doing that and helps them relax and kind of shed off the stress of the day. But for me, being in the outdoors is the quintessentially best way to shed anxiety, shed stress, and knowing that that was such an important part of their lives was, in a way, reassuring to me that there's a reason we go out there.
It definitely is, because I battled with depression for years. It got so bad to where every thought I had was just negative and just kept getting worse and worse. And then the only time that I actually could breathe without a weight on my shoulders was just sitting in the woods, just waking up with the world, listening to the birds, and just having a robin chirp behind you in the morning, sing good morning. It was just the greatest thing, and I actually could feel like I could breathe instead of just having to think about everything constantly. But yeah, not only does it the outdoors provide food for me, it definitely keeps me sane.
Food for the stomach and the soul.
I need food to live.
Oh, food's my favorite dish.
Food, snacks,
so
all the things.
We had the chance. I had the chance. You know, if you know me, you know I love to cook. And so, and Chad Belding, who hosts the National Fowl Life, he's always challenging me to come up with new ideas. And,
that's fun.
And we cooked for the firefighters and the TFL crew and for the guides and the outfitters out there. And we made some of the most unbelievable food that you could imagine. We had, so we were, he said, let's do wild goose nachos. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, throw some chips, throw some wild goose on top, some shredded lettuce, you know, something like that. As it turns out,
yeah, get a lot fancier.
We ended up having like 4-layer baked nachos on the Traeger. So we started with taking the goose breasts, putting them in. We put the goose breasts in water because we did. We had a lot of goose to eat because.
I believe it. 15-man limit.
Yeah,
15 bird.
We had a lot of goose to eat while we were there. So we cooked them on the Traeger at like 300 for 8 hours. And then when you put water and seasonings, we had a lot of provider spices we were using, some oils, a little lemon juice. When you put that into into the water and it cooks over time, it creates a stock or a broth around it, and then it falls apart. So that was the basis for our nachos. But what we did was we put the chips on the bottom. We used Outlaw chips. Have you ever heard of Outlaw Snacks? Outlaw Snacks. They're unbelievable. They had like a Chipotle lime flavored chip. So we used those chips on the bottom.
Chipotle lime chips?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Continue.
On the bottom. Then we had shredded goose. Then we would put cheese and onions. And then we did that layer 3 times and then baked it. Baked it all together in like a nacho casserole on the Traeger.
Nacho lasagna.
Oh, my gosh. It was unbelievable. It was like nacho lasagna chips. It was fantastic.
That
and then we put
fantastic.
Some fresh sour cream, homemade salsa
cilantro?
On top. So we had cilantro, chopped onions. It was phenomenal. And we made wild goose liver pate.
I'm more intrigued with the nachos, so tell me about this one. It convinced
me. Yeah, see, if you're not a liver fan, you're not a liver fan. And
well, I'm a texture person, and I had liver once many, many years ago, and I didn't like it. So my brain just says no.
Do you eat liver sausage or Braunschweiger? Have you ever tried that?
No.
Well, that's like a big Wisconsin thing. But so we sauteed the goose livers with garlic and Napa Valley olive oil, and then we put them through a food processor essentially, and made essentially like liver sausage, but with goose livers instead. Now, Chad Belding was not a liver person. He did not like it. He's like, yuck, it's horrible. And he's like, nobody else is going to like it. But I'll tell you what, we had a big bowl of it, and that bowl was gone by the end of the night.
Nice.
So it didn't get eaten by the ghosts of New York. I know that for a fact. So we ended up having fantastic, delightful dinners. We had taken one of the dinners, we took a speckle belly goose.
Ooh.
And we took ground elk.
Ooh.
And we crushed up the tortilla chips. We crushed them and pulverized them. And when we did that, we added them to the ground elk and then stuffed the cavity of the speckle belly goose with it, and then cooked that goose like beer can style on the Traeger. So it was like stuffed speckle belly goose. That turned out absolutely fantastic. And we also made an alligator tower for alligator gyros. So when it comes to wild game cooking, I think too many people stay in the box and they're afraid to actually get outside of the box. Do you find that? Do you find yourself cooking the same thing?
I'm raising my hand because with all the ducks that we got this past weekend, I'm like, I'm tired of having the same old duck fajitas, duck nachos. We had duck nachos too, but it was just ground up. What else do I do? Make meatballs, but I'm so plain Jane. Like, I can't figure anything out. And which I was looking at the provider cookbook. I'm like, oh, there's could be so many things in here. So I ordered the provider cookbook. But I also looked on Pinterest because Pinterest isn't in now.
I like Pinterest.
Pinterest does not have any duck recipes.
There's no such thing as a bad idea for a recipe. I think too many people are afraid to just try something because they're afraid they're going to screw it up. And in all reality,
that's me. That's definitely me.
The only way you screw up meat is by overcooking it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and even if you do overcook it, you can still figure out some way to use
it. Add some sauce to it.
But for duck recipe, like duck is one of those things that has a unique flavor. And if you have people who don't like that unique flavor, you can make it in plenty of ways that you're not going to have that flavor. And one of the ways I like to use is sauces. I think sauces really change a lot of the recipes.
Mm-hmm.
And people are afraid to make sauces too because you got to stir them, for a lot of the time. But I'm going to tell you a basic sauce that anybody can use that is going to be fantastic on duck.
Yeah.
You start with a half a stick of butter. You melt that down until it's bubbling, and then you're going to add a half a cup of flour to that. So you add your flour to the butter that's bubbling, and you stir it together. That's called a roux. Mm-hmm. So if they ever say roux, R-O-U-X, that's what they're talking about. Then you add stock, and if you have stock or if you have, from whatever you've cooked, if you've cooked something and you have the stock left over, which is essentially just the juice you've cooked something in,
mm-hmm.
you add that to it until it, and then you bring it to a slow bubble and it will turn into gravy or sauce. So if you've got that roux, I like to add to that heavy cream, garlic, and a little bit of salt, and you're going to have one of the best white sauces that will go with everything that you could imagine.
I feel like we should start putting this stuff online as well.
Well, I think you're the one who's good at that, so you should do that. But yeah, I really think you should. And if you have questions about recipes or how to cook something or what to cook or you'd like to try something, hit us up. Go on WAUK.com, WAUKradio.com. Is that what it is, Danielle?
WAUKradio.com, yes.
Go on WAUK Radio. Send us an email. Ask your questions. We'll talk about them on the air. But the trip, and then I got back from the trip to New York, upstate New York, which was unbelievable and indescribable, a trip of a lifetime, to turn around 2 days later and fly to Madrid, Spain to go on a Spanish red stag hunt.
Wow. How did you come about this? Because when Bill and I get married, because it's going to happen one day,
I'll believe it when I see it.
It will happen one day. And we always say for our honeymoon, he's going to go shoot a boar from a helicopter, and I'm going to get a steak. That's our honeymoon.
So, well, so, that's going to be tricky to do the boar from a helicopter and the stag. You could do a boar and a stag in Spain. We saw wild Russian boars while we were there.
He would love that.
And they actually have the genetic line of Russian boars in Spain, and they have Spanish red stags. So you could accomplish that
in one spot.
I don't know if they do helicopter helicopter shooting.
Bandit's excited about it.
Bandit's very excited about going to Spain and doing a combo Russian boar red stag hunt, but I would highly recommend that. And so the first night we landed in Madrid, and there's a 7-hour time difference, so we just kind of settled into Madrid, and we were going to head south of Madrid to Toledo and the Toledo Mountains to hunt red stag, and they commonly have all the different types of ibex there too, which is fascinating. But you're not even going to believe the place we stayed. It was called Casa Tour. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you about it. It was 2,200-year-old remains of a Roman water dam where we were staying. And we'll pick it up there when we come back. You're listening to Raised in Wisco. When we come back, Spanish red stag in Spain, that hunt, and much more as we wrap up our show on 540 AM WAUK, Raised in Wisco.
You know, Lord, I got them hesitation blues. Tell me how long do I have to wait?
Back to Raised in Wisco. I'm Joel Clayfish, along with my co-host Danielle Fairman. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, and we are having a blast this week talking about the last couple of weeks of hunting, which has been unbelievable. You had the duck opener, northern and southern.
Oh yeah, two different weeks.
I had an amazing trip with the Fowl Life and the Outdoor Channel to upstate New York, which was just beautiful, almost like Canada. But we went into the break. We had just landed in Madrid, Spain.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that little segue you got in there. We just landed.
We had just landed in Madrid, Spain, and we're getting ready for... So you had asked, like, how did I ever find that or what made me...
Yeah, because I'm a little skeptical because I don't speak any Spanish, and I feel like everyone over there would have, you know, mostly Spanish as English as their second
language. Yes, Danielle, but I hate to break this to you, but in Spain, they mostly speak Spanish.
Weird.
Yes. And it's not like other European countries that don't have English as a first language. In Spain, it's like you got to know some Spanish.
Cerveza.
Well, there you go. That's some Spanish. but I speak Spanish fairly well, but I learned in Spain that the Spanish I speak is Mexican Spanish.
Oh,
and it's very different than Spain Spanish. They have a TH sound for C sound, so like, you know, gracias would be like gracias.
Oh.
Very strange. And very hard to understand because they drop letters out of the middle of words in Spain, too.
Weird.
So we land in Madrid, spent the first night there, and are picked up by Pablo on the second day, who was our guide slash outfitter, young kid, fantastic kid. Who had studied in the United States, so he spoke some English, which was very nice. He actually spoke excellent English. And we headed south toward Toledo, Spain. Toledo was about 50 kilometers, and they go by kilometers there instead of miles, southwest of Madrid. And we end up at a place where we were staying called Casa Tour. And Casa Tour was the hunting place. Now, how I had found this, I was at the Safari Club International convention in Brookfield last year, and I had gone into one of the auctions. And one of the auctions was for Spanish red stag, and it was about a $5,000 auction, and I bid like $500, almost as like, okay, well, $500. And I ended up winning.
No way!
The trip, the $5,000 trip for like $500.
No way. Now,
that's not to say I didn't spend a ton of money, because I did bring my daughter and her boyfriend along, and you're in Spain, so you want to have the full experience, and it was unbelievable. So we get to Cazatur, the base of our hunting, I mean, to call it a hunting lodge would be completely ridiculous, because this was a Spanish villa that former royalty of Spain had owned, and it was on an area that was built on a miles-long Roman water dam. So a dam that had held water that had gone through aqueducts to supply the city of Toledo with their water supply 2,200 years ago. So we're talking 200 years before Jesus was this water dam. And I'm looking at this thing, and there's mountains like 50 miles away. You can see these mountains. I'm looking around like, well, how did they build this? Well, evidently they were pulled by slaves and oxen, these bricks of solid granite. They would carve these bricks out of solid granite, and each brick was like 4,000 pounds per brick.
Oh my goodness.
The thing was miles long, still standing, a feat of engineering genius.
Yes.
And then they had built these little aqueducts out of the same stone, and they used this like crushed lime in between to hold the water. And so a lot of, and I didn't realize this, but the history of Spain was absolutely fascinating. It was controlled by the Romans during the big Roman Empire. After that, what they called the Visigoths, which are the Vikings, they took it over. So the Vikings lived in the same area because they were like, hey, infrastructure and water flowing and all this. So they took it over. And then the Muslims controlled the land from the Middle East. They controlled Spain. And then the reign of the Catholic kings came after that. But that's still, the reign of the Catholic kings was like, I mean, that was like 1,000 years ago. So we're talking about like almost 1,000 years before any Europeans set foot in the United States. So this property was built on that, and they literally had Viking tombs that were chiseled into the granite on the property. It was unbelievable, and this is a completely unexcavated property. There had been no archaeologists there, no geologists there. This is where we say, Calvin, how much time we have left? 2 minutes. What?
2 minutes?
2 minutes of the show. We're going to have to carry this on to next week's show.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I haven't even gotten to the hunting part. But no. The bottom line is then we drive. So you're staying at this place that was built thousands of years ago, updated 700 years ago, 800 mm-hmm. years ago, with, I mean, like medallions in it from the War of 1812, clay pottery from the Romans. And we're staying in this place. I mean, the short ceilings, people must have been shorter. It made me feel very tall. And this is the day before the hunt. So we get there, and all the meals are very formal, and we're having gazpacho and the traditional Spanish meals. And my daughter and her boyfriend Gabriel, my daughter Ella Rose and her boyfriend Gabriel were there. And we are like, this was the most intense, insane, awesome cultural experience. And I haven't even gone on the hunt yet.
Yeah, I feel like I would stay up all night just exploring that area.
Well, you got jet lag, so you're thrown off from when you're going to sleep anyway. And it was incredible. So we have dinner. And, you know, in Europe, everybody smokes still. They all smoke cigarettes everywhere.
Well.
Which was, to be honest, kind of cool to me. I thought it was like, I mean, like, because it's like a lost thing in the United States.
Well,
but
I've never smoked a cigarette.
I know it's not healthy. I definitely know it's not healthy, but I smoked.
We're not encouraging you to smoke.
No, we're not encouraging
right
people to smoke. But I had a cigar, and I could have, I could have it inside the house.
That'd be kinda cool.
I feel like I'm inside this museum, you know, with artifacts.
Yeah.
And so the next day we go. And we're out hunting, and it's the red stag rut in the mountains of
oh my goodness
in the Toledo Mountains, the base of the Toledo Mountains. And I see just a giant. He's like 350 yards away, which is a really long shot. So I get down in the prone position, and I have him dialed. And the two guides are talking in Spanish back and forth. And I know enough Spanish to know, like, one was saying, like, let him shoot. And the other one's like, no, it's too far. This American's not going to hit this that far away. No, it's too far. No, it's too close. No, it's too close. No, it's too far. So, of course, I pull the trigger. Boom!
Dun, dun, dun.
And one of the guides says, you hit it. He kept motioning. You hit it in the butt. You hit it in the butt. Well, if you hit it and don't recover it, that's your animal. And we're out of time. There's 20 seconds left. You'll have to stay tuned next week for the conclusion of the Red Stag Hunt in Spain. And we've got Rita Verhaelen and Robin Kennedy coming in next week. This has been Raised in Wisco. Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you. I'm so excited.